Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. I am your host, Bill, and let's be quite honest with all of ourselves. This week has been a pretty bad week in the world of pro wrestling. You had a Raw that really wasn't that good. It was pretty doggone bad. And it was the final Raw before a pay-per-view. Gonna talk about the pay-per-view a little later on. Gonna predict all the matches that will be taking place this Sunday at Clash of Champions. Plus, going to get into some wrestling news. COVID has really hit the wrestling industry, especially here in North America as of late. And it is affecting one event that not a lot of wrestling fans really are aware about, but it is having an effect on one of the bigger wrestling events of the year in professional wrestling. And gotta get into some other news as well. But before dive any further, obviously gotta talk about the sad news this week, the passing of Joe Laurinaitis, a.k.a. Road Warrior Animal. This came as a complete surprise to the entire wrestling community. He was only 60 years old, which, if you think about it, is still young. 60 is a young age. I know. You know, we talk about, like, oh, this guy's old, or this woman's old, but if you really think about it, 60 is kind of still young, you know. But from the stories that have come out, he passed away in his sleep, natural causes, so there was no drug use, alcohol use, you know, nothing of that kind involved in his death, which I'm glad to hear, because Animal was really never that type of person to, get into that kind of stuff. But we unfortunately lose the other half of one of the greatest tag teams in the history of this sport, in the history of professional wrestling, in the Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors. His tag team partner, Road Warrior Hawk, passed away in 2003. And this, I know Paul Ellering is still alive, but in a way, this is sort of an end of an era, because the Road Warriors were this dominating tag team, this badass tag team, where they just go in, kick your butt, do like a 2-minute match, and they're done. And, you know, it got people going crazy over these guys. The famous story is when Animal got put together with Hulk as a tag team down in Georgia, Ole Anderson made them the national tag team champions. So, right off the bat, you know, they're already champions. Which is very interesting. And then, you know, as time goes on, they go to the AWA, and their gear changes. They started off as bikers, and then eventually they'd put the makeup on, and then eventually they would put on the pads, the football pads with the spikes on it later on. They went to the AWA, became AWA Tag Team Champions in 1984. Their reign was about a year long. And there's a famous story. It's in the Legion of Doom DVD that came out many years ago, if you guys can find it on eBay. They're fighting the Crusher and Dig the Bruiser, and Animal lifts one of them up, and then when the match is over, they're like, hey, what was that for? We've never been picked up before. And Animal's like, well, you've been picked up now. You know, the act was so big. They went all over the world. They wrestled in Japan. They went to Jim Crockett Promotions, wrestled there for about 4 years, were the inaugural winners of the Crockett Cup Tag Team Tournament. And then in 1988, they would defeat Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane, the Midnight Express, to become the NWA World Tag Team Champions. And that was a weird time in the careers of the Road Warriors, because they're still popular, they're still successful, but they're heels. So in 88, late 88, you know, they're trying to make the Road Warriors heels, but yet they're still getting cheered. And it was by like early 89 where they're like, okay, we gotta change it back to faces. We can never, you know, we can't make them heels. They're too popular. Eventually, in 1990, they made their way to the WWF without Paul Ellering. It was just Animal and Hawk. And the first feud right away was with Demolition. Then eventually, in 1991, they would defeat the Nasty Boys in Madison Square Garden for the WWF Tag Team titles, making the Legion of Doom the first and only tag team in history to have won the AWA, the NWA, and the WWF Tag Team titles. They're the only team to have ever done that, which is quite a feat, and obviously it's one that'll never be touched. And they had about a 2 year run in WWF. Then Animal and Hawk, they went their ways for a few years, and it was talked about on Dark Side of the Ring. You know, they just had like a nasty disagreement. You know, Hawk wanted to do his thing, Animal wanted to be, you know, like a company guy. But they did eventually get back together in 1996 when they would go to WCW, and they were there for a while. They were there for a while, but they left before the whole NWO angle ever started. So, you know, we never got to see the glory that would have been Hall and Nash against the Road Warriors. How that would have gone, well, that's another story. Then in 97, they go back to the WWF, and they are part of WrestleMania 13 in the Chicago street fight with Ahmed Johnson against the Nation of Domination. They would win the WWF tag titles a second time in 1997. And then they would get into this weird angle in 98, and it was a tasteless angle, if you really think about it, where the story is basically Road Warrior Hawk and his alcohol problems, and they had Darren Drozdov in the group at the time, and, you know, it was one of those angles where they just had to go along with it. It's one they probably didn't want to do, but they just went with it. And eventually they left in 99. And Draws, from, you know, what I always remember, you know, from the interviews, Draws was like, to them, like their little brother, like an honorary member of the Legion of Doom. And, you know, I'll be honest, like, I kind of like Draws. I thought Draws was an entertaining guy. It's very unfortunate, you know, what happened to him getting paralyzed in 99. So, after Animal and Hulk leave WWF in 99. They travel around the world for a few years. And an animal is there at the end of WCW. He comes back in 2001 at the Sin pay-per-view. Yeah, I know, that's such a wonderful name for a pay-per-view. Basically, his debut, or his return, actually. Let me rephrase that. His return was not only the same night, but was the same match where Sid broke his leg. That's a tough way to, you know, come into WCW at that time. And then something that people seem to forget, and I kind of forgot about this until I was, you know, thinking about it recently. They were there in the early stages of TNA. They were there for the early part of Impact Wrestling in 2002 and 2003. And they were there for a little bit. And then in October of 03 is when Road Warrior Hawk passed away. But before that, they did have one more appearance together on national TV on a Monday Night Raw, where they fought Kane and Rob Van Dam for the World Tag Team titles, and they got a huge pop. I remember seeing that, and it was like, oh my god, they, you know, it's the Legion of Doom. They didn't stay long. I think it was like a one-night thing that they, you know, were just there. So, Animal comes back in 2005, and he ends up teaming with Heidenreich. And they try to do the whole Legion of Doom character gimmick with Heidenreich, and it really didn't go too far. It didn't go too much into it. And then Animal was released in 2006. Animal would make appearances here and there on TV, and his final appearance on TV was at the All In pay-per-view, which basically was, really, if you think about it, the birth of All Elite Wrestling. So, Road Warrior Animal, for almost the last 40 years of his life, in some way, some fashion, was a part of just about every major wrestling promotion in the United States of America. I mean, started out in Georgia, then to the AWA, then to the Crockett's, then WWF, then to WCW, back to WWF, back to WCW, into TNA, back to WWE, and then his final appearance is for eventually what would become All Elite Wrestling. And of course, you know, the many tours of Japan, either it'd be in All Japan with Giant Baba, or in New Japan during Antonio Inoki's run in New Japan. Now, there is a book, there's an autobiography about the Road Warriors, and I do recommend it. I haven't finished it yet, but it's a really good book. It's called The Road Warriors, Danger, Death, and the Rush of Wrestling. I really do recommend people getting that book if you are either a fan of the Road Warriors or if you are a fan of wrestling in general. It's a really good book. And one of the things they talk about, or he talks about, is when they go to meet Vince McMahon in 1986. And one of the things that, you know, Vince wants to do is make these toys of the, you know, the Road Warriors. And they're like, no, we're really in it for wrestling. And it took a while before Animal and Hulk did make their way to the WWF. His career, basically, Road Warrior Animal was a tag team champion. Never held a singles championship, which I find a little surprising, but when you think about it, he's best known as a tag team. Held the international tag team title, obviously, with Hulk. A lot of these are basically with Hulk. I will note the exceptions, you know, just to make it, to keep it different. Earlier mentioned AWA tag team champions, national tag team champions, the I-Generation tag team champions, the IPW tag team champions, the IWS tag team champions, was a co-holder of the world six-man tag team titles. He and Animal twice with Dusty Rhodes. And then on the third one, it is with Genichiro Tenryu. So there's your difference there. NWA World Tag Team Championship, PCW Tag Team Champions, UWA World Tag Team Champion with Power Warrior, who would later be Kensuke Sasaki, two-time WWF Tag Team Champion, co-holder of the WWE Tag Team titles with Heidenreich, as mentioned, Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famers, 1996, WWE Hall of Fame, 2011, also were named the Rookie of the Year in 1983, Tag Team of the Year in 84 for the Observer Newsletter, had the Comeback of the Year in 2005, pardon me, named Tag Team of the Year by the readers of Pro Wrestling Illustrated four times, including a three-year run from 1983 to 1985, and they are in a lot of other Hall of Fames, which I would like, that I'm going to mention here. They're in the Quebec Wrestling Hall of Fame, or he is, the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum, the class of 2011, the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame, the NWA Hall of Fame, and the Legends Hall of Heroes. Also was the recipient of the Frank Gotch Award from the George Tragos Luthez Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And this past April, or was supposed to be this past April, was the recipient of the Tag Team Award from the Cauliflower Alley Club. And Road Warrior Animal just had a successful career. I think he had a very good life. His son, James, played college football for Ohio State and was in the National Football League for a little while. Currently, he's an analyst. I want to say he's an analyst on the Big Ten Network. So the Laurinaitis name, or at least for Joe, is living on in a very good way. I want to send, on behalf of everyone here that is involved with that wrestling show, including the fans, our thoughts and condolences go out to the entire Laurinaitis family. And this is I know it was a shocking news to hear he passed away at the age of 60. He will truly be missed. And a part of a lot of our childhoods has now gone. The G1 Climax started last Saturday, as you guys are well aware, and this is the first official look at the standings after four shows. They're going to do 19 shows in 30 days. The A block right now, we got a three-way tie at the top. Jay White, Will Ospreay, and Taichi are all at 2-0. Then in the middle, you have Kota Ibushi, Jeff Cobb, Minoru Suzuki, and Kazuchika Okada at 1-1. And at the bottom, Tomohiro Ishii, Shingo Takagi, and Yujiro Takahashi are each at 0-2. Meanwhile, in the B block, Tetsuya Naito, Juice Robinson, and Toru Yano are at 2-0, with Zack Sabre Jr., Kenta, Evil, and Hirooki Goto at 1-1, And rounding out the B block, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Sonata, and Yoshihashi are at 0-2 to start off the competition. I will be honest. I think the one that I'm the most surprised about is that Toru Yano is at 2-0 right off the bat. I didn't think he would be at the top right away. Sometimes they do, you know, a little something here and there, but Yano's at 2-0 right now, as we're going to go into real soon the next set of competitions, and we will see how it goes. Time to have a little bit of fun here, as normally Fro would be here, and, well, I'm going to talk about The Masked Singer. The Masked Singer had their season premiere this past Wednesday night. And I'll be honest, I had to DVR it, so I did get to see most of the performances. So, and I'll give you some guesses as to who I think the contestants may be. But to go over how we had the first group, The Sun sang "Cause I Love You" by Lizzo. The Giraffe sang "Let's Get It Started" by Black Eyed Peas. Popcorn sang "What About Us" by Pink. The Dragon sang "Mama Said Knock You Out" by LL Cool J. And the Snow Owls, yes, you heard that right, Snow Owls sang "Say Something" by A Great Big World. And when the voting happened, when it was all said and done, it was determined that the Dragon would be eliminated from the competition, and the Dragon ended up being famous rapper Busta Rhymes. And you could tell, sort of by the voice, it was Busta Rhymes. I could understand Jenny McCarthy's thinking of, oh, it could be DMX, and she has a good point. You know, the Busta and DMX's voices are sort of the same. The only difference is Busta's is a tad bit deeper than DMX's. But when DMX performs, he has like this growl about it. So as far as guesses, this is going to be interesting. The Sun, I have no idea. I know my friend thinks it's Idina Menzel. I don't think it is. And the only reason I say that is because the way Sun hit that high note, when she hit that high note, it's completely different from the way Menzel hits it. If you go back, like if you listen to her, actually, go back to the Geico commercial that's currently up with her singing. Just watch that, and you could tell the difference in the high note that was hit. Giraffe, Vanilla Ice was a popular choice. I'm not really sure, so I really don't know. Popcorn, I know I'm going out on a limb. I think it could be Tina Turner, just because of the voice and the legs. You know, those legs are very thin and they're very short, so who knows. The Snow Owls, I was thinking Brother and Sister on this. The judges were thinking couples or TV, you know, couples. I'm thinking it's Julianne and Derek Hough. But, again, I could be very, very wrong, and I'm pretty sure I am. Before I get into who's going to be on Group B this coming week, some information about the contestants. They have a combined 46 Grammy nominations, 23 platform records, 10 Hall of Fame appearances, an Olympic gold medalist. Collectively, they have sold over 281 million records, have appeared in over 5,400 episodes of television and 151 films, 5 Super Bowl appearances, 4 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and one of them was honored by Time Magazine, being in Time 100. So, next week, episode 2 is going to see Baby Alien, the Crocodile, the Gremlin, the Seahorse, the Serpent, and a whatchamacallit. And whatchamacallit? Who knows? So anyway, it'll be this coming Wednesday night, and then they'll have a little bit in October before I think, you know, they're going to start showing some baseball and eventually go into the World Series. So be pretty interesting to see. Okay, on a serious note, let's talk about the latest situation going on with COVID-19. And, you know, the COVID-19 situation, obviously, it's very hard to describe because for a while it looked like the numbers were starting to get a little bit low and then they started to get back up. Well, both AEW and WWE were hit with positive tests of COVID-19. And the first piece of news came out earlier in the week, actually came out on Wednesday, the day of Dynamite, that Lance Archer had tested positive for COVID. However, it was not wrestling related. That's a big thing to remember, is his test, or his positive result came from being around someone who had it. So it had nothing to do with wrestling related. So, fortunately, he, you know, played it smart and is quarantining himself. He was supposed to be in the 6-man tag match that was supposed to happen this week on Dynamite, but it got changed up, you know, all the way around. And I think it was for the better because he's in a very big match in 3 weeks on October the 14th when he challenges Jon Moxley for the AEW World title. And you need him to be clear of COVID. You absolutely do. Ben Carter, who has wrestled on AEW as of late, said that he contracted the disease after September the 10th, so he's quarantining himself. And Serena Deeb also said that she had been in contact with someone who tested positive, and she's quarantining herself for 2 weeks. NXT, on the other hand, is where the big issue is, because one of the things that was noticed on NXT this week was the Women's Battle Royal, where a number one contender to Io Shirai and the AEW Women's title would be determined. And originally it was about a group of 11 that were going to be in this Battle Royal, but it ended up being a lot more. And the rumor going around, or the story going around, is that somebody hosted a party. A bunch of NXT wrestlers. Somebody hosted a party. Don't know who. And because of this, a lot of people ended up getting sick, and a lot of people tested positive for COVID-19. So they had to change NXT a bit this week. One of the things that they had to do was they had to announce a match of a four-corner match where it's one representative of each team is going to be involved. So I'm not really sure who has it in NXT. But it is a very interesting situation, and obviously not a good look right now for WWE. Meanwhile, down in Mexico, CMLL, which this weekend is having their anniversary show, which is their biggest show of the year. And their show was changed up a bit because instead of doing the annual show where the main event is either someone loses their mask or someone loses their hair, CMLL put out a lot of polls, and the fans voted for who would challenge for certain titles at the anniversary show. And at least two of the people that were going to be on the show tested positive and are not going to be on it. One of which is Ring of Honor star Bandido, who, and that was a big deal because that was going to be for the NWA welterweight title. He is now replaced by Templario. Ultimo Guerrero, currently a co-holder of the Trios title, tested positive. He, along with his partners, Gran Guerrero and Euphoria, were going to defend the Trios title. That match has been canceled. And a picture came out, or was leaked, of Ultimo Guerrero working in a restaurant, and his mask was down. So, not that good. We also would have had Sugi Heat, who would have challenged for the CMLL women's title. Although this was reported last week, she's not going to be on the show. And she would have challenged Marcella for the women's title. Instead, Marcella will now defend against Dalice. And then, finally, Luvia also tested positive. She would have gotten a shot at the Mexican national women's title against Metallica. No, she would not have fought the band, folks. Instead, she's being replaced by Reina Isis for that show. And that, you know, a lot of stuff, they had to change the card up on such a short notice. They lose a match out of this. Going to be interesting to see how this transpires. Bandido wrestles for Ring of Honor. He's a star there in Ring of Honor, but he was not used at the most recent TV taping, which was the Pure Wrestling Title Tournament, which is currently being aired. So nobody in Ring of Honor got sick from Bandido. Now, speaking of Ring of Honor, if you want to watch a very cool video, and I put this in our Facebook group, they showed behind the scenes what the ring crew does for the ring for each and every match. Ian Riccaboni narrated it, and I thought this was such a smart thing to do. And what they do is, after every match is done, they take the ring canvas off and put on a new one. Now, yes, it takes time, but they're being very safe. And they have, in total, and it's said in the video, 10 ring canvases to use. So, they're, you know, like, we're seeing that they're being very cautious, very careful, very serious about this. They're not taking any chances whatsoever. And I have to applaud Ring of Honor for doing this. I think this is a very smart move on their part. And the fact that we're actually seeing it, because, you know, some promotions, like, they'll use disinfection, you know, either wipes or bottles or whatever, and that's okay, but Ring of Honor's really going above and beyond on this, and I have to give them a lot of credit for not only doing that, but also saying to everyone, this is what we are doing. This is what we're doing. And I can't say anything bad about that, honestly. I know some people are probably laughing about it, but hey, this is a serious thing. You don't want to get your wrestlers sick. You don't want to get them, you know, infected. So I think it's a really good move on their part. Okay. I want to talk about Raw briefly because, holy cow, this was not a good show at all. But there's two points in particular that I want to talk about. The first one I want to talk about is the Seth Rollins angle that was on Raw this Monday night. So, now lately, the Seth Rollins Mysterios angle, because I'm calling it Mysterios, it's not just Rey anymore, it's the entire family. It's been getting good as of late. It had been getting really good as of late. The matches were actually good. And then you get this crap fest on Monday. So Seth is out in the ring. And I'm only talking about this because I know there are people that don't watch Raw. So I'm going to explain to those who didn't watch Raw this segment. And also to those who... you saw it, unfortunately, like me. And I'm going to briefly relive this nightmare. Seth Rollins is out in the ring, and he's got an envelope. And he has something that he wants to tell the Mysterio family, but he wants the whole family to come out. So they come out, and Seth's like, I want to be completely honest with you, you know, and it goes into the Maury Povich show, because he's like, I had people do research and study, and it's determined that Dominic is not the son of Rey Mysterio. And it's like, oh, for the love of God, just, you know, shake, you know, I was like, just bury me now. Then, you know, Dominic or Ray's like, we've already been through this. This was 15 years ago, Doug Holmes. We're not going to do this. And then Seth turns his attention to Aaliyah, saying, you know, maybe Aaliyah is not your daughter. I'm like, oh, God. And then, you know, like, Ray's like, she's 19 years old. She's too naive to understand the business. And, you know, this pisses off Aaliyah. And she walks to the back. And then later in the night, there's a segment where Aaliyah and Ray are trying to have a talk. And Aaliyah's like, you think I'm naive? I'm 19 years old. Yeah. And she leaves. And then the most uncomfortable part of all of this, because this is going to happen, folks. Buddy Murphy comes to the back, and he talks to Aaliyah and consoles her. I want to remind you, for the record, and I'm probably going to be reminding you for a long time, ladies and gentlemen, Aaliyah is 19 years old, okay? Buddy Murphy, who's a very good wrestler, one of the more underrated wrestlers, I think, in WWE, is 33 years old. There's a 14-year difference between the two. And after everything with the speaking out movement and the allegations on Velveteen Dream and Austin Theory, you really want to go there. You really want to go there. I Another thing I do want to mention, but it wasn't important, but I just wanted to note this, was Randy Orton's promo on Raw Monday night. Oh, he botched some lines. You could tell. You could tell. But let's talk about the poop stain in your underwear of life, which is the retribution angle. So, for about the last 2 months, we've been getting this wonderful angle with Antifa-like group called Retribution. They invaded SmackDown, and now they're invading Raw. And it's, you know, they're trying to tear everything down, they're trying to destroy everything, blah, 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 blah. So we find out, at the beginning of the show, Retribution got WWE contracts. Really? They got WWE contracts. That would be like if the NWO got contracts before the six-man tag team match for Bash at the Beach 1996. They were officially added to WCW before the match even happened. This would be like if the Four Horsemen went to the WWF, attacked everyone, and the day that, you know, they are there and they cause havoc, oh, we got contracts for WWF. This is stupid. And then we have them do a promo. And they're wearing these masks. The masks are the least of my concern. They really are. They are the least of my concern. But when we get to the main event, because they are the main event match of Raw, we find out the three men's names in the group. T-Bar, Mace, and Slapjack. Yep, you heard it right. T-Bar, Mace, and Slapjack are their names. Oh my god, that is WCW writing right there in a heartbeat. And then there are two female members. I don't want to talk about who the members are because it's, if you see it, it's pretty easy to figure out who they are. But I want to pull this up real quick. The female members, hold on, I'm getting this up, folks. I want to tell you the names, and I kind of feel bad for those being involved. God, where is it? Okay. So, the female names are Reckoning and Retaliation. Those are the female names. So, we get to the six-man tag match, Hurt Business against Retribution. Here's how the match ends. Lashley has the full Nelson on. He's in the corner. T-Bar goes over. He's on the apron. Attacks Bobby Lashley. Gives him a couple punches. Ref calls for the bell. That's how it ends. That's how that match ends. Not that good. Not that good. So, we had a little bit of fun on our Facebook group. Somebody put this up on Twitter, and it basically got to all over the place. So, we put this up. If you were in Retribution, what would your name be? We had some interesting answers. One would call himself Taserface. One would be called Ajax. One would be called Cookie Sheet. That's a very different response. Cookie Sheet. One would be called Goober. I would call myself Flat Tire, just because of my belly. I'd call myself Flat Tire. So, we're going to have a little bit of fun here with the names, because apparently, some of these names on Urban Dictionary are not what you would think. So we're going to start off with T-Bar. So, according to Urban Dictionary, T-Bar is defined as when one is wearing a thong or G-string, they sit down, it sticks out, and you see a T-Bar. Oh boy, we are off to a good start with this. So the next one, Mace. Not nearly as bad as T-Bar. A heavy, spiked metal club used for breaking heads. A suitable substitute for the pepper spray. Alright. Now, Slapjack. This is the most offensive one. So if you have kids, you might want them to leave or put their hands over their ears for this one. Slapjack is the act of ejaculating on one's hand and then slapping another person in the face. Oh, gosh. Man, that's so bad. That is so bad. And then the other, the female ones, I'll read them off. Oh, no, that's not it. Reckoning, a settlement of accounts, retribution for a submissive's torturous wrongdoings levied in a punitive way. That's the Urban Dictionary for reckoning. And retaliation is a counteraction motivated by balancing the scales of personal justice. But the three male ones are real bad, with Slapjack being the worst one. Although, I think I'm going to start calling Slapjack Slapnuts, based off of Jeff Jarrett's saying when he was at WCW, when he called everybody a bunch of Slapnuts. So, Slapjack, for me, is now going to be referred to as Slapnuts. Okay, so we have a pay-per-view this Sunday, Clash of Champions. All the titles in WWE are going to be on the line. I'm not really sure about the 24/7 title. I mean, Akira Tozawa may or may not have gotten eaten by a shark this week, which is why I'm doubting the 24/7 title will be defended. But anyway, gonna go through all these matches, gonna make my picks, tell you who I think will win at Clash of Champions. And it's going to start with the kickoff match. Don't know why this is the kickoff match. Asuka defending the Raw Women's title against Zelina Vega. I really think this is going to be a good match. I like Zelina Vega. I like both these women, actually. Asuka is one of the best women wrestlers going right now. And Zelina Vega is so entertaining. I think it's too soon for Vega to have the title, so I'm going to say Asuka retains her title. The Raw Tag Team titles are going to be defended. The Street Profits will defend against Andrade and Angel Garza. I mean, if there's a time to take the belts off the Street Profits, it would be now, but they don't really have a tag team division, so I think the Street Profits are going to keep the belts. United States Championship, Bobby Lashley defending against Apollo Crews. Lashley just won the belt 4 weeks ago. Come on now. I think Lashley's going to hold on to the title. Intercontinental title will be defended in a triple threat ladder match. Jeff Hardy will defend against AJ Styles and Sami Zayn. This can be a very interesting match here. I'm going to say, Sami wins the title to make it a twist here. But you never know. SmackDown tag team titles are going to be defended. Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro will defend against the Lucha House Party. Nakamura and Cesaro are retaining the titles. The women's tag team titles, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler will defend against the Riot Squad. This is the first title defense for Jax and Baszler. Jax and Baszler are going to retain the titles. Bayley is going to defend the SmackDown Women's title against Nikki Cross. I'm not really sure if they want to take the belt off of Bayley now or not. I think they're going to keep it on Bayley just a little bit longer. That's my thinking. WWE Championship on the line, ambulance match, Drew McIntyre against Randy Orton. If they don't put the belt on Randy Orton now, they're just not going to pull the trigger. I think Randy's going to win the WWE title. I think a lot of us thought for sure at SummerSlam it was going to happen. It didn't. We're now at Clash of Champions. I think Randy Orton's going to win the WWE title. And finally, Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against Jey Uso. Roman Reigns is winning this match. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. Reigns is winning this match. Just plain and simple. Come on now. It's Roman Reigns in an Uso. So, yeah, it's going to be Roman Reigns. All day, all night. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Going to get into the plugs. If you guys have any questions, comments, anything, send an email, wrestlingman@thatwrestlingshow.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter @WrestlingShow11. Follow us on Instagram @ThatWrestlingShow. Join our Facebook group, That Wrestling Show Fan Group. You type that in the search bar, and boom, you are right there. Visit our store, teespring.com/thatwrestlingshowpodcast. And if you like what you hear, join our Patreon page, patreon.com/thatwrestlingshow. All right, going to plug another digital citizen for Fro. He is also out of action on this show, but going to plug this show as well. This week, it is entitled Cold War TV Cult Watching New Fall Premieres. Try saying that five times fast. Their movie of the week that they're going to review is The Way I See It, plus the 2020 Emmys bet result, and they're into a show called Woke, so you'll get their review of that as well. That is on another digital citizen. Check out Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast with Joe Morata and Michael Quinn. They take you through the world of retro wrestling really like no one else does. This week, they discuss who are some of the best wrestlers that never were world champions. Plus, week two of the Royal Rankings of Best Factions and a review of NWA Worldwide Wrestling from February 25th. 1989. That is this week on Our Vantage Point. Now, if you like your podcasts hosted by one individual, check out Greetings from Allentown with PW Peter Winston. He watches one episode of wrestling each week in his own unique way and discusses all about the episode. This week, he discusses an episode of WWF Superstars from November 11th, 1989. I have seen this episode a lot. And let me just say that somebody makes their debut and it's earth-shattering. That's this week on Greetings from Allentown. And check out Juice Pro Wrestling, where this week they interview the current Major League Wrestling World Tag Team Champions, Ross and Marshall Von Erich, where they discuss, obviously besides wrestling, honoring the family name, their journey into the sport, wrestling for Pro Wrestling NOAH, and so much more. That is Juice Pro Wrestling. Now, if you're looking for non-wrestling related podcasts, check out the Best Pick Movie Podcast with Tom, John, and Jess. They watch each and every Academy Award winning Best Picture winner in no particular order. This week, they discuss the Best Picture winner of 2003, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. I'll be honest, I've only seen the first one. I am going to watch the other two at some point, so I have no opinion on this particular movie. But check it out anyway, the Best Pick Movie Podcast. Also, check out Unspooled with Paul and Amy. This season, they are watching 100 movies, and their goal is to hopefully get all 100 of these movies to go into outer space. This week, they watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High. That's a very, very good movie. I like that movie. 1982. It is Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They talk about that this week on Unspooled. Also, check out The Castle Vault, which is a chronological deep dive of Disney animated films powered by Disney+. Two men dive into the Disney Vault and watch each and every Disney animated movie. This week, they discuss Treasure Planet. Yeah, that's, you know, something a lot of the kids talk about back in the day. Yo, you ever see that Treasure Planet? Yeah, boy. No, they didn't do that. But check it out anyway, The Castle Vault. And finally, check out Sharks Pond, a South Park podcast where I watch each and every South Park episode, review it, discuss it, and a whole lot more. This week, it is part two of Cartoon Wars. And you're going to get my thoughts, not only on the episode, but my feelings on The Simpsons, Family Guy, where both those shows went wrong, and a lot more. All right, next week on the program, going to review Clash of Champions, plus going to preview NXT TakeOver, because yes, that is happening the next weekend. Lovely, isn't it, folks? Absolutely lovely. So on that note, everybody have a good, safe weekend, no matter what it is that you're doing. And come back next week for another episode of That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. And this week, we're going to make a special exception. Because instead of telling you to wrestle on...